We're beginning here on the top of Lamed Bet Amud Aleph for the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says, Matzah berefet ein chayav ba. If you find it in its corral, in its shed, you don't have to do anything with it. Birishut rabim, on the other hand, if you find it out in the public domain, chayav ba, then you have to deal with it. Imaita bebeit hakvarot, if the animal is found inside of a cemetery, lo yitameila, then you don't become tamei for it. Here we're assuming that the individual is a kohen, or there's a restriction against the individual becoming tamei. Im amar lo aviv hitamei, if his father instructs him to, despite the fact that it's found in the Beit HaKvarot, that he should go in there and get the aveda and become tamei, o shu amar lo al tachzir, or his father says, despite the fact that he's obligated to return an item because of a shavat aveda, his father says, don't return it, lo yishmalo. You don't listen to him. You don't have to listen to your father's instructions in this instance. Parak v'ta'an. If he unloaded, afilu arba'a v'chamisha pe'amim, even 4 or 5 times, chayav, you are chayav on an ongoing basis to continue to aid this individual. Shenemar, azov, ta'azov, that we did in yesterday's daf with the duplicate lishonot, that Komakom, but also that Azov and Hakeim mean that you have to do it multiple times. There's no limit to the number of times that you have to do this. Halach v'yashavlo, something we discussed yesterday. If the Balim go down and sit down on the side, v'amar, ho v'alecha mitzvah, it's your mitzvah to do. Imritzon chali frok, prok, if you want to go ahead and unload it, go ahead and unload it. Patur, then you do not have any obligation to unload it. Shenemar imo. Because there the pasuk says that you do it alongside of him. Azov, tazov, imo. Imo means alongside of the baalim, with the baalim. So the baalim don't have a right to go sit on the side and say, it's your mitzvah, go do it. They have to be active participants in the unloading process. Imayazakein ochole. If the absence of the baalim is not because they're sitting on the side and saying, it's your mitzvah, but rather they have some sort of impairment that doesn't allow them to do it, either they're too old, they're sick, whatever reason that they can't participate or help out, but it's not because of an unwillingness to help out, it's simply that they are physically limited. Chayav. Then you are chayav to engage, because then the failure of Imo has nothing to do with the Baalim walking away, it has to do with the fact that the Baalim are limited. Mitzvah min haTorah lifrok. There's a mitzvah from the Torah to unload, of lo liton, but not to load the animal up. So the Gemara will ask, that seems very strange, because we have Azov Tazov Imo, and we have Akeim Takim Imo, seems to indicate there are two mitzvot. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af Liton. Rabbi Shimon says, there's both a mitzvah to unload, as well as to load. Again, the Gemara will discuss what's the meaning of this. Rabbi Yossi Aglida Omer, Imaya Lav Yetera Maseo, if the animal is overburdened, it has too much of a load on it, Ein Zakuk Lo. You don't have to help the individual out. Shenemar, Tachat Maseo. The animal is rovates, tachat masa'o, which means that it is crouching under the burden of its load. Masui, shiachol amod bo. It has to be a proper load that was on it in the first place. So if there is masa'o, which is a masui ha-ra'ui lo, a proper load on its back, then you help out the balim. But if the balim failed to take into consideration the fact that the animal can't carry this, and they overburden or overload the animal, then you don't have to help, because here the failure is not simply that something happened, therefore the animal is now in pain or needs to be unloaded. Somebody was negligent, and they overloaded the animal. In that case, you don't have an obligation to engage with the animal. That's the shita of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Implicit in that shita is that the Tanakama disagrees with Rabbi Yossi Aglili and says, even in that instance, you have to unload the animal. So Amarava, Refit Shamru, Eino mita'a, ve'eino mishameret. The cowshed that we're speaking about here sits somewhere between a secure location and an unsecure location. Meaning that the refit doesn't send the animal out to be lost more, but it also doesn't secure the animal. Eino mita'a, it doesn't cause the animal to be more lost or in a more difficult situation. Miktani, eino chayaba. Because the Mishnah says you're not chayab to engage with this animal and do a Shabbat Aveda and perform a Shabbat Aveda, that already indicates that the animal is not going to be in a worse situation because of where it is right now. If it was the animal would have a deteriorating situation based on the circumstance it's in, then you would be required to engage with the animal and do a Shabbat Aveda. Ve'ena mishameret, it obviously cannot be secure. The fact that the Mishnah has to tell you in this situation, you don't have to perform a Shabbat Aveda, means that there would have been a Havamina that you should have performed Hashavat Aveda. This Agadatcha Mishameret, if you're telling me it's a case where it's completely secure, Hashta Mashkachla Avrai, if he found it outside of this location, Maila Gavai, he would bring it into this secure location, and that would be deemed to be Hashavat Aveda, as we learned yesterday, that you can return it not only to the Baalim, but to the Gina, the Churvato, Hamishtameret. So to here, if it is a secure location, if it was outside of there and you returned it there, that would be a Shabbat Aveda. Certainly, if it's already in there, then you don't have to tell me. Mishkala magavai mi boy. If it's already in that secure location, you have to tell me. Elishma mina. So from here, you would conclude, eina mishamaret. It's not a completely secure location. Shma mina. So the chiddush of the Mishnah is that there are some times where an animal is not in a completely secure location, yet there's no mitzvah of a Shabbat Aveda because the animal is somewhat contained and this situation is static. And therefore, you have no obligation to intervene in order to do a Shabbat Aveda in that circumstance because you're not necessarily going to improve the situation and the situation is not deteriorating. The way that it would deteriorate is if the refit itself, the way that Rashi describes it over here, is that it has tons of openings and exits or egresses where the animal could run away and become more lost or get itself into a more difficult situation. So again, it's not a secure location, but it's not a location which allows the animal to get into a worse situation or to run away. So it has somewhat secure perimeters to it so that the animal in general would be contained or not get into a worse circumstance. But on the other hand, it's not completely secure to the point where you would consider it already that you've done Hashavat Aveda. There the Mishnah says, don't get involved or don't intervene there because the animal is doing well and the Baalim will get their animal back either because they placed it there intentionally or they know that it's grazing there or the fact that it won't deteriorate means that the Baalim will be able to find it. It's not going to go into a circumstance or get itself into a circumstance where it would be even worse. And there's going to be no way that the Baalim can recover it. Gemara is saying, if the situation is stable, then there's no reason to interfere with the situation. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. Now we have a qualification of this, which is, v'hu shomed toch ha-tchum. This is all true if the animal is found within the tchum. We'll assume here that tchum means tchum Shabbat, but in essence, it really means the city limits, which is these are the normal areas that animals graze from this city. The people take the animals out of the city to graze. This would be within the normal perimeter of where animals would graze. So that is why you leave it. Michlal. From this we conclude, Dibirshut Rabim, if it was out in the public domain, Vafilu B'toch HaTchum, even though it was inside the city limits, Nami Chayav, then you would be Chayav to return it. So if you read Rav Yitzchak's qualification on when you're not obligated to return it, meaning that you have no obligation to intervene, when the animal seems to be in a situation, it's plausible that it's not lost and that it's engaged in normal behavior and within the normal perimeters of where you would find animals. So even though it's not in a secure location, but the animals of the city tend to be within the city limits, outside the city grazing, and therefore there's no reason to interfere or think that this animal is an aveda in this situation. But the implications of that are, first of all, if it's in the Reshut HaRabim, where the animal shouldn't be just wandering around. They already would obligate you to have to return the animal. As well as if it's outside the tchum, for sure you would have to return the animal. Ike demadni la seifa. There are those that write it on the seifa, which is, in the Reshut HaRabim, you're chayab to return it. There, b'shrutim chayaba, amar Rav Yitzchak, v'hu shomer chutz l'tchum. That's if only if it's outside the limits of the city. It's on a Reshut HaRabim that's chutz l'tchum. Mechlal de berefet. That would imply that a refet afilo made it chutz l'tchum, nami enu chayav ba. That would indicate that if it's in a refet situation, which we already define as being stable situation where it's not completely secure, but it's also not in a deteriorating situation, it's stable. So So there, it would, even outside the tchum, since it might be normal for animals to go out there and to graze outside of the city limits, you wouldn't automatically assume that it's lost in that case or that the balim are looking for it. On the other hand, if it's in a reshut rabim outside the city limits, that's very indicative of the animal's lost or the animal's just wandering around. Inside the city limits, according to this version, even if it was on the reshut rabim, it wasn't grazing, that still wouldn't be lost because animals wander around in general within the city and within the city limits. And so even if it's found in the reshut rabim there, that's not an animal that's necessarily lost, that's just an animal that's been let out to graze. So in the two versions of Rabbi Yitzchak, you have differing definitions of where it's normal for animals to be. In the first definition, it's only normal to be in these semi-secure, stable situations inside the tchum. That means in reshut rabim, or outside of the tchum, you would have to return it because it's an aveda. According to the second version, then inside the tchum, it's always a stable situation, and you don't have to interfere. Outside of the tchum, then you would have to interfere if it was a reshut rabim, but if it was this semi-secure situation, you would not have to interfere. So those are two lishonot of Rabbi Yitzchak. And the Gemara is obviously toying here with what are the norms. What would you expect, or where would you expect to find animals that are not lost, or when do you deem them lost? What we don't want people doing is interfering in other people's lives or with other people's animals and bringing them back, saying, oh, I found your animal out here. And he says, well, you're not really doing me any favor. It wasn't lost and it was out there grazing. So we want to bring a balance between what's considered to be normal and ensuring that animals don't get lost and people do Hashavat Aveda. And that's both what the Mishnah is stating and what Rabbi Yitzchak's qualifications are doing, are saying when you see animals in these circumstances, should you consider that to be an animal who's lost, or should you consider that to be an animal that is in its normal environment? And that's what they're trying to figure out. Where are the limits to what's normal, and where is it beyond those limits, and it's already considered to be an aveda? Right, when you say eno chayav ba, is no obligation, but once you have no obligation, then you might be putting yourself in a predicament if you do get engaged, because then you become a shomer, you become responsible for it. So engaging brings with it obligations, not just simply, oh, I want to do a Shabbat Aveda, I'm a nice person, but then you already now are obligated. You can't just say, oh, you know what, I'll drop it off here, I'll leave it here. That doesn't work. Now you have to actually get it back to the possession of the Baalim. It's much more involved than simply saying, bring it back closer to the city and leave it. That doesn't work anymore. Beveit HaKvarot lo yitamela. If it's found in the Beit HaKvarot, you can't become tamei. Tanu Rabbanan. Minayin shimamar lo aviv hitamei. O shalom marlo al takzir shalo yishamalo. How do we know that this is true? That you shouldn't listen to your father when he instructs you to do something that's against the Torah. Here, telling his son, the Kohen, to go and become Tamei, to do Hashavat Avedah, or telling his son not to do Hashavat Avedah, not return the item. Shenamar, Ish, Imo, Vaviv, Tirau, Vetshab, Totai, Tishmoru, Ani Hashem. So here you have in Pashat Kiddushim, you have a juxtaposition, the Pasuk of Ish, Imo, Vaviv, Tirau, the obligation for one to quote-unquote fear their parents, Ve'et Shabtotai Tishmoru, the obligation to keep Shabbat, Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. Kuchem Chayavim Bichvodi. The Ani Hashem at the end of the Pasuk, as well as the fact that Shabtai Tishmoru teaches you that you're all obligated in my Kavod. Be that Hashem's Kavod and Hashem's instructions take precedence. Taima Tichtiv Rachmanet Shabtotai Tishmoru. Because the Pasuk says you must keep my Shabbatot. That means despite fearing your parents, you must keep Shabbat. So if your parent tells you to violate the Shabbat, even though out of quote-unquote yirah for your parents, maybe you should listen and you should abide by your parents' instructions, it still says that Shabbatotai Tishmoru. My Shabbat takes precedence, and therefore I govern in these situations. Halavachi, the Gemara says, Hava mina, I would have thought, Tzaitele, you would have to listen to him. Vamai, why is that the case? Exactly what you pointed out. Hayasei, when it comes to listening to your parents, that's a positive commandment. V'haylo taseh v'aseh. The violation of Shabbat involves both an aseh and a lo taseh. V'lo ati aseh v'dachi et lo taseh v'aseh. And you don't have the aseh of kivud av v'aim or yirat av v'aim come and override the aseh and lo taseh of Shabbat. So even if you didn't have this pasuk, you wouldn't even think that you should violate the Shabbat based on the instruction of the parents. So when it says itzrich, I still need it. Sakadat chamina, I would have thought, ho vehukash kibud aveim lichvodo shel makom. There is a parallel drawn between honoring one's parents and honoring a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Shenemar kan, Rashi claims that this is a gzeira shava. It's interesting gzeira shava because it involves a pasuk from Mishle, which is in the Tuvim, not found in the Torah. Rashi claims it's a gzeira shava. We'll see Tosafot in a second. Shenemar kaman, kabedet avicha veti mecha, that you have to honor your parents. Benemar lahalan, and it says in Mishle, kabedet Hashem mihoncha, that you have to honor Hashem from your possessions or from what you own or that which you can contribute. So Rashi says it's gzeir shava of kabed kabed, teaching you that just like you have to honor Hashem, so too one has to honor their parents. We spoke about this in the Gemara and Kiddushin, but there are reasons for that as well, which is that just like Hashem is benevolent and takes care of us and is good to us, and we have to have hakarat hatov to Hashem, and that giving kavod to Hashem is an important acknowledgement of Hashem's kindness to us, so too, kabed et avicha ve et imecha, that one honoring one's parents is, in a mini size, the same model or same paradigm by which honoring one's parents who have been good to them, that have taken care of them, that have raised them, given birth to them, mean that the individual has a tremendous hakarat hatov towards their parents for all that they have done to them. And just like we have a model in a miniature size of a child towards a parent, that models the same type of relationship that we want the individual to have with Hashem. And the Gemara in Kiddushin says, Shlosha shutafim ba'adam, there are three partners in the creation of an individual. That's a parents and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So they're all put on this same plane vis-a-vis the individual looking towards them. So you see this idea of Kibud Aveim being equated with Kavod Makom. So Hilkach Litzayitle. Then maybe I would have to listen to my parents, despite the fact that they are telling me to violate the Shabbat. If they're given the same standing, Kibiyachol, as a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then maybe their word is just as good as a Kodesh Baruch Hu's word. If your parent tells you to violate the Shabbat, you listen to your parent, even though the Torah says otherwise. Kamashvan, Dilo Lishmale. Therefore, the Torah teaches you, even though we put parents up on this pedestal, that pedestal is still subject to the word of Hashem, and that Hashem trumps in these situations. So there's still a hierarchy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, parents, and then the child. And even though the child looks at the parents in some ways as the same level of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nevertheless, there still is a difference. And the way that you would phrase it is that Atem chayavim bikvodi. That's what the Gemara says. That Ani Hashem says that not only are both of you, whether, even though you are chayav in kavod towards your parents or you're towards your parents, Ani Hashem says that both you and your parents are chayav in my kavod. And therefore, because of that, Hashem's word trumps even over the parents' word. Tosfot over here notes, Kabedet Hashem oncha, hadanakad krod the divrei kabbalah. Why does it bring a pasuk from Mishlei? The ish imova viv tiro. Why doesn't it just bring that pasuk? V'chtiv et Hashem lokecha tira. It also says that you have to fear God. So you have this similar gzeira shava, not only the kavod side, but you have it on the yira side. Mishum denechele etuye kra de kavod. It's because they're much happier, they are much more comfortable bringing the pasuk of a kavod. This might relate to a machloket about what exactly is the requirement to listen to one's parents. Now, the Gemara in Kiddushin says that one may not be soter divrei horav. One may not contradict one's parents. So there, the Gemara brings that under the rubric of yira. Part of yirat horav, fearing one's parents, is that you do not contradict them. So then, a question is, beyond contradicting them, is there a requirement to listen to one's parents? So is that subsumed under the mitzvah of yira? That's a possibility. Or is that only part of the mitzvah of kavod, which is that when your parent asks you for something, then you have to listen because of kavod towards your parents. And obviously that would have nafkaminot as to where you think that is derived from. If you think it's derived from yira, yira means that you must listen to your parents at all times, with the exception of when it controverts that which is written in the Torah, then it would mean that you have to listen in all instructions that they are giving you. On the other hand, if you think maybe the derivative is kaveda tavicha vetimecha, which is, if you think the derivative for that is, it's derived from kavod, maybe there's only a requirement to listen when it deals with your parents' kavod or things that deal with your parents. But if your parents are telling you something to do with your life, maybe they don't have a right to dictate what happens in your life. They have a right to dictate your relationship with them, but they may not have a right to dictate how you conduct yourself or the choices that you make in your life. So Tosfot over here doesn't say why, but Tosfot says the Gemara favors putting it under kavod rather than yirah. Maybe, or you could speculate, that Tosfot thinks that listening to one's parents is a derivative of kavod and not necessarily a derivative of yirah. Yirah might just be don't contradict them. Kavod is to listen to them. And then, again, that might have limitations then as to when you have to listen to them. For instance, if you think it derives from yirah, there again, you could say it's limited to simply contradicting. But if you expand it and say it means that out of yirah, you always have to listen, maybe that even has broader implications of when you have to listen to your parents because it's under that rubric of yirat horav. Again, that's a discussion for the Gemara in Kiddushin, just noting that Tosfot says that both gzerot shavot exist. The fact that the Gemara here favors kavod as the gzerot shavot for listening to one's parents might shed light or be indicative that the Gemara here seems to think that listening to one's parents derives from the mitzvah of kavod. Okay, mitzvah min haTorah lifrok, aval lo liton. So we saw in the Mishnah that the Mishnah, according to the Tanakhama, says that there's a mitzvah to unload the animal, but there's no mitzvah to load the animal. My aval lo liton. What does it mean that there's no mitzvah to load the animal? Ilei aval lo liton klal. That means that literally there's no mitzvah to load the animal. Maishna prika. Then what's the difference between unloading? Dichtiv azov tazov imo. That the pasuk in Mishpatim says that you have to assist him in unloading his animal. Tina nami, the pasuk that's found in Parshat Ki Tetzeh, Ktiv Hakim Takim Mimo, that you will reload him together with the Baalim. So then, if that's the case, the mitzvah is stated in both situations. Why should you favor one and say that that's a mitzvah min haTorah and the other one's not? Ella, mitzvah min haTorah lifruk bichinam. It's a mitzvah from the Torah to unload the animal without any compensation. V'lo liton b'chinam ela b'schar. But when it comes to reloading the animal, there you can demand payment for reloading the animal. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af liton b'chinam. Shimon says that even reloading the animal has to be done without compensation. Tanina, l'had d'tanu rabbanan. This Mishnah supports that which we see in a Braita, which is prika b'chinam tina b'schar, that prika has to be done without compensation. Tina, loading can be done for compensation. Shimon Omer, zov zov bichinam. Both of them have to be done for free. From the Braita, our Mishnah now, the way we're interpreting our Mishnah, is similar to what the Braita states. Mai tamayu derabanan. What is the reasoning behind the Rabbanan's position? Di sakadatcha ki Rabbi Shimon, if you think that Rabbi Shimon is right, lichtov rachmana tina, velo bayi prika. Because then the Torah could have simply written the mitzvah of tina, loading the animal, and then you wouldn't need prika, then you wouldn't need to know about unloading the animal. Va'ana amino, and I would have, by myself, extrapolated or done this. Uma te'ina, delayed bat sar balei chaim, v'leka chisaron kis. Over there, by te'ina, where you're talking about loading the animal, where there is no tsar balei chaim, and there's no loss that's involved, chayav, you're obligated to help out, prika, in the case of unloading the animal, de'it bat sar balei chaim, that there is pain to the animal, v'chisaron kis, and there is loss to the owner, lo kol shukein, wouldn't that be a kal v'chomer? The contrast between them, which indicates, first of all, there's tsar bala chayim by unloading, because the animal is roveitz. It is now crouching or is burdened by whatever the load is. Unloading it relieves the animal of that burden. And so there's a tsar bala chayim issue. The Rosh pointed out in yesterday's Gemara that the Gemara says that there's also tsar when it comes to ti'ina. If one person loads the animal versus two people loading the animal, there is some pain caused to the animal because it's not as stable when you're loading it up. Number two is, even in the loading process, there is some pain to the animal. What the Rosh indicates is that it's a far cry from the pain or the tsar bala chaim they're talking about when it's overloaded or it can't manage the load anymore. So there is tsar bala chaim in both if you're contrasting it versus other mitzvot. But between prika and ti'ina, it's clear that prika involves much more tsar bala chaim than ti'ina. That's number one. Chisaron kis, we'll see in the Gemara as well. The chisaron kis that we're speaking about here, at least, is the animal itself. So if the load is left on the animal will break under the load, or it will damage the animal. So therefore, there's chisaron kis involved here, versus the ti'ina, where the guy, if you don't load it up, he's just going to sit around for longer. There's no damage to the animal itself. Now, again, there, you could argue that there is some damage if it's not put on properly, if it's not loaded with two people. Maybe there is some damage, but again, it's minor compared to the damage of an animal that's overburdened and is being crushed or cannot handle the load anymore. The Gemara will ask about chisaron kis, which is maybe he's going to sell the items, and now he can't get to the location where he has to sell the items. So then, the Gemara says here that the Chachamim are saying, I have two psukim, Aprika and Ti'ina. Had I wanted to say that the dinim are exactly alike, just write Ti'ina, and I could have learned Prika from Ti'ina. If I know about loading, then I also know about unloading. So I would only need one pasuk. So what the Chachamim conclude is, El alamai hilchato katvei rachmano. Why did the Torah then specify both loading and unloading? Lomar lecha, to teach you there's a difference between them. Prika bechinam, that unloading is done for free. Tina b'skar, but the loading is done even for compensation. So what the Chachamim's position is premised on is that it was unnecessary to write both unloading and loading. You could have just wrote about loading, and I would have known unloading. The fact that the Torah went out of its way to tell you both is teaching you that there must be something special about unloading. There must be some incremental obligation with regards to unloading. What's that obligation? That is the obligation to do it for free. And so that's how the Chachamim come up with this differentiation that unloading is for free, and loading you can ask for compensation. Prika is clearly the one that you didn't need to write. If you write it, it must be teaching you something new about Prika. Rabbi Shimon, my taima, what is the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Is Mishum Delo Misaimei Krai. This is what we saw yesterday. That Rabbi Shimon says it's not obvious which pasuk is speaking about Prika and which one's speaking about Ti'ina. Meaning that it's not clear, even though if you read the psukim, it sounds like what the Chachamim say, that Akim Takim Imo is a case of loading and Azov Tazov Imo sounds like you're unloading. Nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon's position is that the psukim aren't absolutely clear. It doesn't use words or verbs that make it absolutely clear that it's loading or unloading. And therefore, if I only had one pasuk, I would automatically assume it's talking about unloading. Since unloading is the lesser of the two chidushim, if I only had one pasuk, I would gravitate towards explaining it as being unloading. Therefore, there's no kal v'chomer. Because no matter whether you write two psukim or one pasuk, I would only know about unloading. So now, why do I need a second pasuk? To tell me about loading. Well, if I have a second pasuk about loading, the reason it's not about loading is because I wouldn't have known about loading without the pasuk. But that means I can't learn any extra din from this. And therefore, it is a situation in which I have no extraneous pasuk. If I don't have an extraneous pasuk, the dinim are the same. That means that just like I unload for free, I'm going to have to load for free. Because had the Torah written one pasuk, I would have said it's speaking about unloading. Now the pasuk wrote two pasuk, I'm just saying it as in loading as well. But that means that the dinim are the same, and I couldn't have learned loading if not for the second pasuk. That means you have to do both of them for free. Now the Gemara asks about this. V'rabonan, amai lo misai meikrai? Why is it that the psukim are not clear? The psukim are definitely clear about which one belongs to Tina and which one belongs to Prika. Why is that the case? Because hachaktiv rovets tachat maso. Over there it says that it is bending under the load. Hatam k'tiv noflim baderech, that it has fallen on the way. Again, that's why it sounds more like what the Chachamim are saying. Duramu inhu v'tu unayu b'orcha mashma. So the way the Chachamim are explaining it is that it's both the animal and the load are on the ground. Noflim baderech, what fell on the way? So according to the Chachamim, both the animal fell, as well as the load that's on top of the animal that fell. Therefore, Akim Takim Imo is, you gotta get the animal upright, and then you gotta get the load back on the animal. The other Rabbi Shimon, Noflim Baderech, Inu, Vitu Unayu, Ilavayu Mashma. He says no, that the load never separated from the animal. What fell was the animal. The animal fell along with the load that is still on it, but the load has not detached from the animal. The load hasn't now just spilled out on the road. He simply, if you upright the animal, the load will be back in on track. It'll be uprighted as well. There's no separate indication of the necessity to put the load back on. So therefore, you have no proof from the pasuk as to whether it's talking about unloading or loading, because the noflim baderech is that the animal is down with the load on it. So hakim takimimo could mean raise the animal or unload the animal and then raise it. It doesn't mean that necessarily you have to deal with two separate items that are now dispersed over the ground. If you say that the load's separated from the animal, then there's only one obligation that you can have, which is, okay, lift the animal up, but then deal with the load. If the load is still attached to the animal, then you could argue that it goes in either direction. You have to upright the animal, but then what do you do with the load? Is uprighting the animal also uprighting the load, and therefore it's a mitzvah of ti'ina? Or is it that uprighting the animal and disassociating it from the load, which would mean that unloading the animal in this situation, and therefore he thinks that the psukim are ambiguous. If you didn't know that there were two psukim, you could read either one of the two psukim as meaning unloading. The fact that now we have two psukim, we're going to say one's about unloading and one is loading. But absent the two psukim, I wouldn't have known from Azov to Zobimor, Hakim to Kemimo, anything more than simply that you have an obligation to unload the animal. Shimon in the end will agree that this pasuk is talking about loading. He's just saying that had I not had the other pasuk, this pasuk is ambiguous enough for me to say that it's talking about unloading. Once I know the pasuk of unloading, Azov to Zobimo, then Rabbi Shimon agrees that this pasuk is talking about Ti'ina. Tosafot, again, in yesterday's daf discussed the fact that even according to Rabbi Shimon, who says Lo Misai Mikra, in the end he agrees that Azov to Zobimo is speaking about Prika, and Hakim Takim is speaking about Ti'ina. It's just that if you only had one pasuk, the pasuk of Hakim Takim is ambiguous enough that I would say it could be speaking about unloading. But once I know that I have the other pasuk, then it definitely is speaking about Ti'ina. Now, Amar Rava, here is a very important line that is brought in the Gemara, but it's also a very controversial line because the Gemara makes assumptions about it and never clarifies the issue, which is Amar Rava, Midivrei Shnehem Nilmad. From both positions, that of the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, we learn Tzar Balei Chaim De'oraita, that Tzar Balei Chaim is a Torah commandment. Vafilu Rabbi Shimon lo kamar el mishum delo mesai mikrai. Rabbi Shimon agrees that had it been clear in the psukim that one pasuk was talking about ti'ina and the other pasuk was talking about prika, and had you given me the mitzvah of ti'ina, I would have been able to learn out the mitzvah prika from it because of the difference of Tzar Balei Chaim that is between them. Aval mesai mikra darshinin kavachomer. He would have agreed with the Chachamim's kavachomer had it been that you could learn from the pasuk that it's ti'ina. Mishum mai? Why is that the case? La mishum de tzar balei chayim de'ar shinan. Because of the problem of tzar balei chayim, which is that we said before, the kal v'chomer is, if ti'ina you are chayavin, then certainly prika, unloading your chayavin, because of tzar balei chayim. That means that both the chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, whose din is premised on this kal v'chomer, believe that Tzar Balei Chaim is a right to din that would sway the outcome of the case. Rabbi Shimon only demurs to the Chachamim's position because of the fact that he doesn't think the pasuk is obviously speaking about Te'ina. But had it been speaking about Te'ina, he would have been comfortable with the Chachamim's Kavachomer. Mar says, now maybe Dilma Mishum Di'ika Chisaron Kis. Wait a minute. Didn't we say before that there was another alternative, which is the Kavachomer is based on two principles. One principle is that there's Tzar Balei Chaim. The other one is that there's Chisaron Kis. The reason that Prika was more chamur than Ti'ina was because we said Tzar Balei Chaim and Chisaron Kis. You're assuming that it's Tzar Balei Chaim. Maybe it's because of Chisaron Kis. V'achi kamar. Uma Ti'ina deleipa Chisaron Kis chayav. Just like Ti'ina, where there is no loss, you are chayav. Prika deipa Chisaron Kis lo kol shekein. Certainly, then you should have to do it. Mar says, v'ti'ina in ba chisaron kis. So this is what I mentioned to you before. It's not so obvious that loading the animal doesn't involve chisaron kis. Milo askinen ad ha'chi v'ochi batil mishukei. Isn't there a possibility that he's taking the merchandise to the marketplace to sell? And if you don't help him reload it, then he's going to be sitting around. By the time he gets it loaded onto the animal, the market will be closed. And therefore, there is chisaron kis. There is a loss to him. Inami atu ganve v'shakle, koma de ikibade. Or there is a possibility that the ganavim could come and steal that which is there with him. So therefore, you can't premise the Kal V'chomer on the fact that it's Chisaron Kis. Because Chisaron Kis also applies to Tina. Tina involves Chisaron Kis. Prika involves Chisaron Kis. There's no Kal V'chomer. The truth is that it's not as straightforward because the Chisaron Kis of Tina is exogenous losses. It's not losses from the animal itself being damaged. It's the fact that there's an opportunity cost that you are foregoing, meaning that you're foregoing the profit or the ability to take it to the shuk. The Gemara is making it clear that it sees that as a loss that's equal to the loss of the animal. But you could have argued that that's not the case, that a loss or damage to the animal is much more directly associated with the load that's on its back versus the load that is being left on the ground and not loaded onto the animal. There you could say it was much more of an indirect type of loss, and you could separate between them. The Gemara equates them, saying to you that foregone profits or the losses from lost opportunity, that is equivalent to the animal being damaged. And therefore, there's no longer a Kal V'chomer. The Tosfot asks, why can't you still keep the Kal V'chomer intact from the fact that in Tina, sometimes there's a loss, sometimes there's not a loss? Because sometimes there's a time factor in getting to the shuk. Sometimes it's just a matter of delay. So there is no loss or real loss involved. On the other hand, by prika, when the animal is under too heavy a burden, it's collapsing under the burden, there's always a loss. If you leave it there, the animal's clearly going to be injured. So maybe you could argue that there's still a Kal V'chomer that ti'ina, where there is no loss, then a Kal V'chomer to prika, where there is always a loss. Why does he say you can maintain it? He says, v'eshomar, kevin ti'ina yeshba chisaron kis, lo avi b'schar. He says that if ti'ina has chisaron kis involved in it, then you can't get paid for it. So then Tosfot says you can't make the Kal V'chomer anymore because of the fact that once you determine that there's a loss to the Baalim, you don't have a right to collect schar for helping them out. So now if you can't charge schar, then there's no difference between prika and ti'ina, and that can't be the pivotal point or difference between them. Because once you say that, then both of them involve a similar situation where you can't collect schar from it, and now there's no difference between tina and prika. So it can't solely revolve around chisaron kis. If that's the case, then we go back to Rova's stipulation that tzar chalei must be doraita because the chamei make the Kal V'chomer, and Rabbi Shimon would have made the Kal V'chomer had it not been for the fact that the psukim are ambiguous. All right, so now the Gemara continues and says, teida, the tzar balei chaim doraita. I can show you that Tzar Balei Chaim is definitely doraita, the Ketani Seifa. Because the latter part of the Mishnah speaks about Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, Omer, Imaya Alav Yetera Masa'o, Ein Zakuklo. If he's overloaded, and the Baalim were negligent in overloading him, you don't have to deal with him. Shneamar Tachad Masa'o, under his burden. Masui Shechol La'mod Bo. Masui that he can withstand, or that he can hold. Lav Michlal D'Tana Kava Savar. From that you would imply that the Tanakama disagrees with Rabbi Yossi HaGalili, and says, Zakuklo, that you must aid him. My time, huh? What's the reason that you have to aid him? The assumption being here is that both of them darshan the pasuk of Tachad Maso, Matsui Hara'ui Lo. So if that's the case, when he overloads it, why, according to the Tanakhama, do you have to intervene? He agrees that you have to put on a proper load. So why is he intervening? La Mishum, the Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita. Because there's an overarching problem here of Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita, which forces you to engage with the animal, even though the Baalim were negligent in what they did. It says, no. Dilma b'tachat masa'o plige. Maybe they're arguing about the drasha itself. Not everybody agrees to the drasha. And that the Rabbi Yosef Galevi, savar darshin and tachat masa'o. He believes that you do darshin tachat masa'o, b'masu'i shechol amodbo. Rabban and Savi lo darash shina and tachat masa'o. They don't have that limud. So their machloka may not be about Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita. It might simply be about whether this drosha is a valid drosha. Yosef Galili believes it is, and therefore when the Baalim are negligent, you do not have to engage with the animal. On the other hand, the Tanakhama says that I don't have that drosha, and therefore there's an obligation to do it no matter how the Baalim loaded up the animal. What is clear from here, and the Gemara will come back and say this later on, is that Rabbi Yosef Galili clearly believes that Tzar Balei Chaim is only midrabanan. Because he allows you to leave the animal under the load when it's the Baalim's negligence. The fact that he allows you to do that must mean that he thinks Tzar Balei Chaim is the Rabbanan. That the Gemara doesn't argue on. The only question is that proof that the Tanakhama believes that Tzar Balei Chaim is Deoraita. The Gemara rejects and says that's not necessarily the case. They could be arguing about the drasha of Tachat Masa'o. Teda, the Tzar Balei Chaim lav Deoraita. Let us prove that Tzar Balei Chaim is not Deoraita. Diktani Reisha, because the Reisha says, Halach v'yashav lo, that we just saw in the Mishnah, that if the Balim go over to the side, prop up their chair and say, listen, you have a mitzvah to do it, I'm going to watch you take care of this. Vamar lo, ho balecha mitzvah lifrok prok. You have a mitzvah to unload it, go ahead and unload it. Patur, you don't have to engage. Shenemar, imo, you have to do it together with him. If you believe that Tzar Balei Chaim is doraita, mali ita the mareba day, mali kileta the mareba day. Why does it make a difference whether the balim engage or not engage? I mean that there's an overarching obligation on you to take care of the animal, irrespective of what the balim do in this case. The fact that the balim sat down should not be an exemption. Elim, can you believe that Tzar Balei Chaim is only a din derabonan? Mara says no. The olam Tzar Balei Chaim doraita. Misavart patur the gamre. When the Mishnah says you are exempt from helping him out when he sits on the side, that doesn't mean you're completely exempt and you can walk away. Vidilma patur bechinam v'chayav v'schar. I mean that what this does is changes the dynamic of the case where you no longer are obligated to do it without recompense, but rather you can insist on getting paid now. The balim are not doing it with you. You're not under the mitzvah of prika. If you're not under the mitzvah of prika, you don't have to do it for free. But you still have a mitzvah of Tzar Balei Chaim. But there you can charge him for dealing with the animal because the balim are not there and he failed to make it into a case of prika because of the failure of Imo. So the Gemara says you could still believe that Tzar Balei Chaim is doraita and yet he could walk away. Walking away here, I mean, doesn't literally he walks away. It simply means he no longer has to do it without compensation. V'achikamar, Rachmanan. This is what the Torah says. Ki ite lamarei badei. If the owner is there with you, engaged with you, avad gabei bichinam, then you're commanded by the Torah to be involved in this mitzvah, and you have to do it even without compensation. And then when the owner sits on the side and says, you take care of it, avid gabei bischar, then you have to do it, but there you can charge him for doing it. And that'll be the difference between the two cases. Uli olam tzar balei chaim doraita. But we would conclude here in the end that Tzar Balei Chaim is Deoraita. Now, what's interesting about the Gemara over here is that the Gemara is vacillating between whether Tzar Balei Chaim is Deoraita or Tzar Balei Chaim is Dirabanan. What is absent from the Gemara, or what is very problematic in the Gemara is, it never tells you where is the source for Tzar Balei Chaim Deoraita. The Gemara takes it as a given. That either Tzar Balei Chaim is Doraita, it's from the Torah, or Tzar Balei Chaim is Dirabanan. It never explains to you that if it is Doraita, what is the source for the fact that there is a mitzvah Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita? There's nowhere in the Torah where it says, don't engage in Tzar Balei Chaim. Don't involve in causing pain to animals. There is no such instruction in the Torah. Therefore, when the Gemara says Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita and just throws out a term, what is the source for this? The other places that it's mentioned in the Shas, again, there's no indication of a source for it. The Gemara in Kuf Chav Chet, Amud Bet, in Shabbat, where we spoke about in the past, Kuf Nun Dalet in Shabbat, it also mentions it as well. But in those cases where it says Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita, again, it works with this given that Tzar Balei Chaim is Doraita, or maybe it's the Rabbanan, but never gives a source for that. Therefore, the Rishonim argue about what exactly is the source for Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita. Not only do they argue about it, but the sources are from all over the place, and as far, even some far-fetched sources, because the Gemara never provides the actual source for the Tzar Balei Chaim Deoraita. That leads Rashi, interesting enough, does what, generally how Rashi deals with these things is, and the most pashut way to deal with it, is Rashi in Shabbat, when the Gemara says Tzar Balei Chaim Deoraita, Rashi over there comments and says, Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita, Shenamar, Azov, Tazov Imo. That you have to be porek the animal. You have to unload the animal. Vika demand the Dorish time et erkra. And some people are Dorish. The reasoning behind the Pasuk is, Mishom Tzar Balei Chaim, Be'ilu Mitziot. And he quotes the Gemara on Lamed Bet Amud Bet, which is our Gemara over here. Well, we're reading through this Gemara. The Gemara says Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita. The Gemara never said or connected between Azov, Tazov Imo and says that's the reason for Azov, Tazov Imo. What Rashi is saying that implicit in the Gemara is this difference between Prika and Ti'ina. And by Prika we said there is Tzar Balei Chaim, by Ti'ina there's not. And therefore, prika is a kal v'chomer because of that tzar balei chayim. Rashi is then extending that and saying, well, if there's tzar balei chayim by prika, then maybe that's the reason for prika is the tzar balei chayim. It's not just the chumra that I could have learned out, but that's the underlying reason behind why azov tazov imo. And that's what we just did in the kal v'chomer that we said before, that the kal v'chomer was both about chisaron kis and tzar balei chayim. The Gemara eliminated chisaron kis and says the only thing left is tzar balei chayim. From that, Rashi wants to conclude that that's the reasoning behind the mitzvah of prika is tzar balei chayim. And therefore, according to Rashi, that is the source for it. The Ritva in Shabbat says it even more explicitly. He says, "Tanafkalei mazov tazovimo." That's where you learn it from. So Rashi, the Ritva over there, take what would seemingly be the simplest approach to say that tzar balei chayim derives from azov tazovimo, our Gemara over here. The appeal of that is that this is the main sugya of tzar balei chayim in Shas. So it would make sense that the fact that the Gemara is dealing with here, this is the main sugya, that it's somehow associated with the actual mitzvah of azov tazov imo. But if you look in the Chatam Sofer, in the Shut Chatam Sofer, he says what everyone might be thinking, which is, Beitzrichli Iyun Barashi. He says, I don't really understand what Rashi is saying here about Tzar Balei Chaim Doraita, Shekotav, that he says it comes out of azov tazov imo. He says, "V'lo matzati came with Baba Metzia." Chatam Sofer says, "You go in Baba Metzia, you read the daf, you don't find that which Rashi is saying in Shabbat. It doesn't exist over here." He says, "From there, it sounds like the Gemara knew it. It was a given that Tzar Balei Chaim is Doraita, not that it was learnt from the mitzvah that is here." So the Chatam Sofer already raises the issue or the seriousness of the issue with regards to where is the source over here. And the Chatam Sofer himself says it makes it sound like they have an outside source for it, and the Gemara is just working with an assumption that we know that it's true without giving you the source. And again, Rashi is probably driving it from the Kal V'chomer, which associates Tzar Balei Chaim with Prika, and therefore he then extrapolates that to say that that must be the reason for Prika, or that must be the behind the scenes of why the Torah says you have to be poreik, or the difference it notes between prika and teina, which is indicative of the fact that Tzar Balei Chaim plays an important role in the mitzvah of the zov tazov imo. So that's one possible source for the fact that Tzar Balei Chaim is a sur midoraita. The Rabbi Akiva Eiger goes as far as to say that it's a mitzvah asei, which is that Tzar Balei Chaim doraita is a mitzvah asei. And because it's a mitzvah asei, it has the ability to then be used as an asei dochelot asei. Meaning that there are situations or circumstances in which prika, unloading of an animal, might trump a lot asei because of the fact that you have an obligation to unload it, which is a mitzvah asei midoraita. Therefore, if in doing so you might violate a lav, that might be okay because of the fact that asei dochelot asei. And therefore, he thinks that it's a mitzvah asei. The Radbaz says something interesting, which is that the Radbaz argues on this Rabbi Akiva Eiger and suggests that Tzar Balei Chaim is a mitzvah doraita, but it's not an asei and not a lot asei. He has this category of mitzvot that are not a positive commandment, not a negative commandment, but simply a mitzvah doraita. That there's a mitzvah doraita, mitzvah min haTorah, not to engage in Tzar Balei Chaim, but that it's not an asei or a lot asei. Now, I'm going to come back, keep that Radbaz in mind, I'm going to come back and give maybe an explanation that would make sense out of that Radbaz. On the other hand, if you go to the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam brings in the Mor Nevuchim a very interesting source for the fact that Tzar Balei Chaim is Doraita. He quotes the Psukim by Bil'am, that Bil'am over there is hitting his donkey, and the Malach comes out to stop him and asks him, why is he hitting the donkey? And he chastises Bil'am for his treatment of the donkey. The Rambam from there says that you see that there is an obligation not to engage in Tzar Balei Chaim because the Malach asks him, why did you hit the Aton? What type of question is that? Why do you hit the Aton? Because I wanted to hit the Aton. The only reason you would say, why did you hit the Aton, is because you're not allowed to hit the Aton unnecessarily or overburden the Aton with hitting. So therefore, the Mor Nevuchim comes up from that and says that Tzar Balei Chaim is derived from the Pasuk by Bil'am. Now that might have other implications, which, again, we don't have enough time to get into them, which is Tzar Bali Chaim only a mitzvah on Klal Yisrael? Or is Tzar Bali Chaim also a mitzvah for Nachrim, for non-Jews? Well, if your source is from Bilam, then in all likelihood, it has application to Bnei Noach, not just to Jews in general. That's another possibility. The Meiri here in Bava Metzia brings the source for Tzar Bali Chaim from Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho. That you're not allowed to muzzle a shor when it is threshing because of the pain that is caused to the animal. If you muzzle the animal while it is threshing, it's in tremendous pain. The Torah says you cannot do that. The Torah says you have to leave him unmuzzled when he's working the threshing so that he can eat at the same time. And so from there, the Meiri concludes that Tzar Bali Chaim is deoraita. Now that is somewhat akin to Rashi's limud because it takes a mitzvah and it looks at the reason for the mitzvah and says, well, if that's the reason for the mitzvah, then that must mean that Tzar Bali Chaim is the oraita. I mean, the Meiri's reasoning is a little easier because over there it's much more obvious what the reason behind the mitzvah is versus the Prika case of unloading where it's not as obvious. But again, it's similar in genre to the way that Rashi learned the source for Tzar Bali Chaim. The Ritva over here in Bava Metzia makes a suggestion that it's actually Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. That the source for Tzar Bali Chaim is not a pasuk in the Torah, but simply Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. The Gemara takes it for granted because that is the Mesorah. That Tzar Bali Chaim is Doraita. And the source for it is the fact that there is a Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai that indicates such. So the Ritva over here, as opposed to the Ritva in Shabbat, who says that it comes from Azov to Zovimo, says over here that it comes from a Halacha the Moshe Mitzinai. The Chatam Sofer, in his Tshuva, which we mentioned before, where he questions Rashi's source, says that the source for the fact that Tzar Bali Chaim Doraita is actually a Pasuk in Tehillim, which says, Barachamav al kol ma'asav, that Hashem has mercy on all his creations. So that you see that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is not just Merachim on human beings, but rather he's also Merachim al kol ma'asav, on all of his creatures and all of his creation, and therefore there's an obligation to treat all creations in a way that doesn't cause them pain, because Hashem has rachamim on all of his creations. If the Chatam Sofer himself doesn't say this, but the Sefer Charedim does say this, that obligation then comes from Balachta Bidrachav, that you have to follow in the ways of Hashem. I mean, that the mitzvah is to emulate Hashem. If Hashem is rachamav al kol ma'asav, then now you have a mitzvah to emulate Hashem, which is a mitzvah d'oraita v'alachta bidrachav. Mahu rachum, afata rachum. Mahu mevaker cholim, afata mevaker cholim. This idea of imachei deo, that you imitate God. So to over here, you have the obligation to imitate God. And if rachamav al kol ma'asav, then you too have an obligation of rachamav al kol ma'asav to act the same way God does. And that's the mitzvah d'oraita of Tzar Bali Chaim. So now, we've given here all these different approaches to Tzar Bali Chaim, or trying to find a source for the fact that there is a Tzar Bali Chaim midoraita. What is interesting, and a proposal that I heard from Rav Asher Weiss, he quotes it in the name of the Chazon Ish. I'm not sure the Chazon Ish himself said it, but the Chazon Ish has a similar idea that comes from the fact that there's certain mitzvot or ideas that we know that are not commanded in the Torah, but rather come from what we'll call dat Torah, which is that, for instance, the mitzvah of zrizim makdim in the mitzvot. How do you know that there's a mitzvah of zrizim? To have alacrity when you're doing mitzvot, to do a mitzvah as early as possible in the day, for instance, a brit milah, unlike the minhag in Eretz Yisrael, where they do it later in the day, the Tog Mara specifically says that the mitzvah of milah requires zrizim, and that you should do it early in the day, early in the morning. So where do we know that? The Torah never says bizariz. The Torah never gives you this of zrizim makdim the mitzvot. The Gemara learns it out from Avram, Vayishkem Avram Baboker. So that we see that there's behaviors of the avot, which the Torah records, and from the activity of the avot, we would conclude that zrizim makdim the mitzvot must be an important idea because the Torah points it out, or the Torah focuses on that aspect of what the avot did. Therefore, sometimes the Torah, through its messaging, conveys to you mitzvot or ideas that are important to the Torah, like chesed, which is the Torah clearly it says is something important because it points out the chesed that the Avram does and the Avot do. And therefore, it gives you in a sense that chesed is an important idea that the Torah holds by. Now, if you do that, you can then move over to the mitzvah of Tzar Balei Chaim. And what we didn't mention here, but comes up through what Rashi said and through what the Ritva said. Rashi says the source is Azov Tazov Imo. The Meiri says that the source is Lo Tachsom B'Dishor B'Disho. But if you look at many mitzvot in the Torah, you can say that those mitzvot, even though they don't explicitly say it, they indicate that Tzar Balei Chaim is an issue. Kan Sipor. The fact that you have to shoo away the mother bird when you take the chicks or the eggs. Embedded in that is definitely some aspect of Tzar Balei Chaim. The fact that the Gemara in Brachot says that you can't go and say, Al Kan Sipor Yagiu Rachamecha, there's a machloket in the Gemara as to why you can't say it. But it's clear that the Gemara sees it as being an issue of Rachamim, being merciful to the mother by shooing it away. Lo Tishchot, you're not allowed to shecht Otoved Beno on the same day. That restriction also seems to derive from a certain aspect of Rachamim, that you don't kill them on the same day. The fact that Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, that you're not allowed to muzzle an animal. Also, the requirement to unload an animal, preka from an animal. If you take all of these mitzvot together and look at them as a package, what you see from this, not from any individual mitzvah, but from the totality of what the Torah is saying, is that the mitzvah of Tzar Balei Chaim is important to the Torah. The Torah wants you to have rachamim on animals or treat animals in a decent manner. Now, it doesn't specifically say that, but from the slew of mitzvot that are involved in this aspect, you would conclude that the Torah thinks it's important to treat animals in a proper manner. And that might go back to what the Rabbaz said. Remember, the Rabbaz says that there's a mitzvah d'oraita of Tzar Balei Chaim, but it's not an asse, it's not a lo tase. That might exactly be what we're describing over here. We're describing a mitzvah that derives from Dat Torah, the spirit of what the Torah is trying to convey to us, even though there's no specific mitzvah that dictates Tzar Balei Chaim. But if you have Dat Torah, if you take the Torah as a whole, then you would know that the Torah clearly cares about what happens to animals, that there is Tzar Balei Chaim is an issue for the Torah. The question then is, what are the limitations then involved in Tzar Balei Chaim? The Nemuke Yosef here has a very interesting distinction, but the Nemuke Yosef says that Tzar Balei Chaim, something that is a lot of pain to the animal, is d'oraita. Something that is a small amount of pain to the animal is only d'rabbanan. So the Nemuke Yosef already opens up a window into the possibility that Tzar Balei Chaim can be permitted in certain circumstances. But he says that the Torah only precludes heavy pain to the animal. Small pain to the animal, the Torah does not necessarily preclude. The Nemuke Yosef says that, but just using the Nemuke Yosef, you already see that we're dealing with a certain amount of tension here, which is that animals are there to serve man, and therefore, in serving man, there's going to be a certain amount of discomfort to the animal. How much discomfort is considered to be okay, and how much discomfort is already considered to be Tzar Balei Chaim d'oraita? That already the poskim are dealing with. And therefore, the question of killing animals, the question of experimenting with animals, all of these then come up into where is the limit on Tzar Balei Chaim d'oraita. Just as an aside, there is a machloket in the poskim as to whether Tzar Balei Chaim is limited to animals or Tzar Balei Chaim also applies to human beings. Do you have an application of Tzar Balei Chaim by human beings? Right, so that's the question. Is a human being just the top of the animal kingdom or is a human being a totally different category? In the Shulchan Chovot Yair, he makes it clear that there is no Tzar Balei Chaim by Adam. He thinks that this is a specific din by Behema. Adam is in a totally different category and you can't overlap between them. People say that Adam doesn't have a din of Tzar Balei Chaim because Adam has a seichel. So since Adam is a seichel, he can make a choice about whether he's engaged in Tzar Balei Chaim or not. That's his choice. If he wants to do it, he doesn't want to do it. But you could understand, you could see that maybe there is an application of Tzar Balei Chaim by Adam. Now, in terms of domesticated versus wild animals, there is a machloge between the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it's irrespective, it shouldn't matter whether they're domesticated or not. The Yaivat says a chiddush that maybe there's no isur by wild animals, that there's no isur of Tzar Balei Chaim by wild animals. Again, I'm not getting into the details, I'm just showing you that there are these differences preventing tzar to animals. Do you have an obligation not only not to cause tzar to animals, do you have an obligation to prevent tzar to animals? does the mitzvah of Tzar Balei Chaim also include the necessity for you to protect an animal that's in duress or in trouble? Do you have an obligation to take them away from that Tzar Balei Chaim if it's not humanly imposed? You find a bird that is injured. Do you have to then take care of the bird or try to help the bird out? There you could see that distinction between domesticated and non-domesticated animals, whether you have to get involved or not. Maybe there that distinction that the Yaivitz makes more sense. But again, these are all parts of what the Poskim are trying to clarify about where the obligation of Tzar Balei Chaim is. Rav Moshe in a tshuva in the Igros Moshe says that it's clear that if an animal is endangering a human being or causing damage to a human being, that there's no restriction against killing the animal in order to protect the human being. There's no equation of equivalence. There's no such thing as, oh, Tzar Balei Chaim, you can't kill the animal. If the animal is doing damage and it's causing problems to the human being, you can kill it. If you have bees, you have wasps that are possibly endangering or going to sting, you have mosquitoes that are going to bite, killing those animals is not a problem. Tzar Balei Chaim there does not override the human necessity or need in that case. Most poskim, and it's pretty clear from the poskim, allow Tzar Balei Chaim, but they put limitations or conditions on it. For instance, the Trumat Adeshin says it has to be something that is a Tzorach Gadol. Therefore, the Trumat Adeshin is Matir. When it comes to Shechita, you're supposed to clear out the area where you do the Shechita. It's the same thing where they do surgery on people. They shave away the hair from that area so they can see clearly what they're doing. Same thing with Shechita. You want to move away the hairs from that area. So in an animal, you can cut the hairs away. On a bird, they have feathers there. The only way to clear the area out is to pluck the feathers out. Now, that's painful for the bird. The Trumat Adeshin over there is Matir, allows you to pluck away the feathers, even though it causes pain to the animal, because it's a real tzorech. There's a necessity to do it. When the Ramah quotes it in Shulchan Aruch, he quotes the Trumat Adeshin's head there, and he says that despite that fact, it's still something that we don't do or we try not to do. So again, there you see this toying with when is it permitted, when is it not permitted. The Sefer Chassidim says, as long as it's not a tzar gadol, as long as it's not a lot of pain. Obviously, when you shecht an animal, there's some pain involved. But we try to shecht them or in the most painless fashion or in the way that is the least problematic for the animal. That doesn't mean there's no pain at all, but we try to reduce the pain. As long as it's not a tremendous amount of pain to the animal, that's considered to be within the normal realm. And therefore, if you have a tzorech, then we will allow you to do it. There's also the Abinyan Sion who says that your benefit from the animal has to be direct. That you have to get direct benefit in order to allow for any tzar to the animal, you have to get a direct benefit. It can't be something where it's like a side benefit that you're doing it. There has to be a direct correlation between the benefit you're getting and the small pain that you're causing the animal. In the Tshuvot, you have like the Minchat Yitzchak, Diane Weiss, who says in the Minchat Yitzchak, I'm just going to bring you as examples of these types of things, he asks about raising chickens for eggs. That when they raise chickens or eggs, he talks about certain practices where they withhold food from the chickens. They only give them water for a period of time, whether such thing is allowed. And in the end, he writes, Kol zeh me'ikar dina. He says, me'ikar din, all of this is permitted because l'tzorach adam, tzar balei chaim is allowed. But then he writes, v'adayin yesh bezeh inyan musari. He says, even without the halachic normative law, there is a aspect of morality here that has to be considered. We see examples after examples of where Chazal worried about Tzar Balei Chaim. The famous story is Rabbi. The story with Rabbi where this young calf comes running over to Rabbi and hides in his cloak because they want to shecht him. And Rabbi goes and pushes him out and says, this is the kach no tzarta. This is your lot in life. Rabbi is punished for that later on because he didn't have rachamim on the calf. That doesn't mean that he wasn't right about the fact that the calf should have been shechted, but he had to have some quote-unquote heart about it. There is this aspect of having compassion, and the Gemara emphasizes that, and you see that in many of the Farim, the Sefer Chassidim, the Sefer Charidim, all quote cases and stories of individuals where they were acting not intentionally, but unintentionally, and they were causing tzar to animals, or they were doing something that wasn't perfectly okay with the animals. And they speak about the Kabbalists seeing in their face that something's wrong or that they were punished for that. So again, there's beyond the normative side of this, there's a Musari side, which is that even if you're permitted to do something, doesn't mean you should do it because causing pain to animals and not having any mercy on the animals is improper, and Chazal teaches that. The Tzitz Eliezer speaks about animal experimentation. And there he says that animal experimentation is allowed. He quotes this Truma Tadeshin that we just mentioned, that causing pain to animals for a tzorech and a tzorech chashuv is allowed. So he says for sure animal experimentation is allowed. But he writes in the end as well, which is I think what you were asking, he says, you can do experiments with the eyes of animals, and then to kill them afterwards in order to see what the outcome is or to understand the implications. Ella, dimiyot tov, there is a requirement to be good. Do it with anesthesia. Again, he says that even if you have to do it in a manner that causes the least amount of pain or the least amount of difficulty to the animal. So again, he says, from the normative law, you're allowed to experiment with animals. But if you're going to do it already, do it in a way that reduces the pain and the difficulty experienced by the animal. The Rav Moshe writes about veal, that he thinks it may be very problematic to eat veal because of the way they treat the animals. That the mistreatment of the animals in order to get the veal, even though, quote unquote, it might be halachically justified because of the tzorach adam, but it's not musari. There's a lack in compassion and maybe proper behavior towards the animal. Right, that was the, when they tied the, they locked them into a cage and tied them up to fatten them up. I mean, that there are other ways to do it today where it's not that way. But just saying that Rav Moshe is clear, even though he permits killing of animals when it's endangering human beings, and the tzorach, nevertheless, in certain circumstances, it has to be taken into consideration. The Yechavadat, Rav Adi Yosef, has a question, is it mutar to go to a stadium lechazot u'mechemet ha-shvarim? To go to bullfighting, right? All these things which involve entertainment that involves animals hurting each other, damaging each other, is such a thing permitted? And most of the reason that people say that Adam doesn't have a din of tzar ba'alei chaim is because Adam has a seichel. So since Adam has a seichel, he can make a choice about whether he's engaged in tzar ba'alei chaim or not. That's his choice. If he wants to do it, he doesn't want to do it. Then that would bring up the gladiator fights where they're forced into it, that maybe you shouldn't be in those fights because, or watch that for entertainment because of the fact that the person's compelled to be in that situation. But the idea that seichel differentiates man from animal would differentiate it in tzar ba'alei chaim, which would differentiate a football game from a bullfighting, boxing match and bullfighting. Rav Adi Yosef says that maybe when you pay to enter into the bullfighting, now you become a messayel obrei aveira because you're funding this type of behavior. But there you could maybe differentiate between a zoo and bullfighting. So even though in a zoo, the animal's in captivity, you know, people will claim, oh, that's tsar, but maybe over there, it's slightly different. They're not mistreating the animal necessarily, but it's the tzorech adam in a way that's only a small amount, we'll call it tsar, but the animals are well cared for and taken care in this captivity. So you have to balance between the entertainment value of the zoo, but there's also learning from that and that children are able then to engage and understand animals, versus bullfighting, which would be clearly something where there's damage or hurt to the animals. So again, the tension between tzar ba'alei chaim and tzorech adam comes up in all these cases, and what the poskim are looking for is the framework or limitations to where it's okay and where it's not okay, and where's that line. And again, it's a balance that in society we try to find between animal rights versus the needs of man. Sometimes it goes too far on the animal rights side, and then the needs of man are hurt by the animal rights. On the other hand, sometimes the needs of man override so much to the point where we're not considerate enough of the animal. But the idea of the source of tzar ba'alei chaim d'oraita being the Torah's overarching theme that we want to be rachamav al kol ma'asav is very appealing because that means that it's an ethic of the Torah which is governing us. The problem with that is that it doesn't give us exact guidelines. It's not like normative in that way, but it does give us an ethos that we have to be careful and we have to be merciful towards animals. All right, that's just a sidebar in terms of the sources. Gemara says, Lema Misayile. Here's a proof to the fact maybe that Rav is saying is true, that Tzar ba'alei chaim d'oraita is the case. Be'mat ovei kochavim mitapel ba, kebe'amat Yisrael. You have an obligation to take care of a non-Jewish animal, just like a Jewish animal. I'amar bishlamat tzar ba'alei chaim d'oraita, mishamachim mitapel ba, kebe'amat Yisrael. Therefore, your obligation is irrespective of the owner. If you say tzar ba'alei chaim is d'rabbanan, then you can argue that it's a issue that Chazal imposed on Klal Yisrael to take care of each other's behemot, and therefore you can say it's limited to a Jewish behemot. Once you expand it and say that it applies to all behemot, that sounds like it's much more of an overarching ethos that says that we want people to take care of animals. irrespective of who the owner is. If you say it's only the Rabbanan, it's not clear why you're dealing with the non-Jew's behema, or why you're doing prika for a non-Jew. Why aren't you just doing prika for a Jew? Again, if you're in the club, then you get the benefits of being in the club. If you're not in the club, you don't get the benefits. But the fact that the Torah says that this benefit extends even to someone outside of the club means that the Torah sees this as being important irrespective of ownership. And that means that Tzar Bali Chai must be Doraita. Where it says, Hota Mishumeva. That's not true. It doesn't necessarily have to be, because it might be that the Chamim instituted that you take care of the Behemat Goy, like the Behemat Yisrael, in order not to engender ill will. If they see that you only help the Jews and don't help out the non-Jews, that's going to engender ill will. So because of that, they said, take care of the non-Jewish Behema, just like you take care of the Jewish Behema. So there is a reason you could say that. Where it says, Achinami Mistabra, that makes sense, Diktoni. Because the Tosefta continues and says, Imaitatuna Yayin Asur, if it's carrying Yayin that is Asur, meaning that it's Yayin Nesech, or it's Tam Yenam, that's on the back of the animal, Ein Zakukla, you don't unload the animal. Imai Bishlama Lab Doraita, if you say that it's not Doraita, I mean that's Dirabanan, Mishumachi Ein Zakukla, that's why you don't engage with it. Ela Imai Doraita, if you say that it's a Torah law, Amai Ein Zakukla, then why don't you have to engage in it? This is where the Reb Kiva Eger says that this idea of Tzar Bali Chaim is an assay. It's an assay because it overrides the Isur Hana'ah that you have from unloading the wine that is there. You're not allowed to engage with this wine of Isur. You're not allowed to get any enough from it. You're not allowed to help out with it. Yet we're saying here that if it was Doraita, you wouldn't be allowed to help it. So what do you see from here? That if you believe that it's Doraita, you believe that's an assay. And the assay overrides that restriction of Isur Hana'ah. So that was Rabbi Kiva Eger's proof to the fact that there's really an assay of Tzar Bali Chaim Doraita. Where it says, Achi Kamar, Ulatina Yayin Asur, Ein Zakukla. No, it's not talking about unloading, it's talking about loading. You don't have to load up the animal when the Yayin is restricted, when it's problematic Yayin. So the Gemara changes it from being unloading where there's Tzar Bali Chaim to loading where there is no issue of Tzar Bali Chaim, and there you can walk away. Ve'ema Tovei Kochavim Umasui Yisrael. Says that if it's a non-Jewish animal, and the load is a Jewish load, vechadalta, then you back away. V'yamar Tzar Bali Chaim Doraita, if you say that Tzar Bali Chaim is Vina Torah, amai vechadalta, why do you back away? Azov tazov mi baile, you should have to help out. Just because it's a non-Jewish behema, why should you be allowed to leave it in pain? If Tzar Bali Chaim is Doraita, you should be obligated. Where it says, Olam Tzar Bali Chaim Doraita, it is Doraita. Hatam b'tiina. They're talking about loading it. That you don't have to load the animal. If it's a Jewish load with a non-Jewish animal, you don't have to help out the non-Jewish animal. Iyachi, ema seifa. What about the seifa? Beimat Yisrael. If it's a Jewish animal, umasui ovei kochavim azov tazov. Then you're obligated to help out. V'ibiti'ina. If you're talking about loading the animal, amai azov tazov. Then why do you have to help out? Because mishum tzara the Yisrael. My answer is because the Jew then is in trouble. So when it says, Iochi, afil the Reisha Nami. What about the Reisha too? There the Jew's in trouble as well. Here the Jewish animal is in trouble and you want to help load it up, even though it's a non-Jewish load. In the Reisha, it's a Jewish load. So why shouldn't you help out because of that? Reisha bechamar obeid kochavim. The Reisha is talking about a non-Jewish donkey driver. Sefer bechamar Yisrael. The Sefer is talking about a Jewish donkey driver. So in the Reisha, where it's a non-Jewish donkey driver, the donkey belongs to that non-Jew. The load is Jewish. So then if you don't help out, the only one who's left in a bad situation, a bad predicament, is the non-Jewish donkey driver. There you have no obligation to help him out. The Torah doesn't require you to help him out. On the other hand, if it's a case where it is a Jewish donkey driver, and the donkey belongs to the Jew, but the load is a non-Jewish load, there you're obligated to help out because the Jewish donkey driver is the one who's in distress now, and you have to help it out. What about the fact that Tzar Bali Chaim Doraita should make it irrelevant? The answer is that we're talking about ti'ina. We're not talking about unloading, we're talking about loading here. Loading is not an issue of Tzar Bali Chaim, and therefore you can make a decision to walk away, or a decision to help out. What governs the decision? Who's in duress here? If it's a non-Jewish donkey driver, you can walk away. If it's a Jewish donkey driver, you can't walk away. So it says, by pasakt. How do you know that the Reisha is talking about a non-Jewish driver? And the safest time at a Jewish driver. It says, Stama de Milta, Inish Bartar Chamre Azil. Meaning that the normal way is that wherever the donkey belongs to is the donkey driver. So if you have a non-Jewish donkey, it's usually a non-Jewish driver because he goes with his donkey. If you're dealing with a Jewish donkey, then you're usually dealing with a Jewish donkey driver because he goes along with his donkey. Then the Gemara says, wait a minute. This is all nice, but you just skipped over one main point, which is that the pasuk brought by the Braita over here to say whether you desist or you engaged is v'chadalta azov tazov imo. That's a pasuk speaking about unloading, not loading. You said, oh, yeah, don't worry about Tzar Bala Chaim Doraita, because we're talking about Tiina here. How do you explain it as Tiina? Bahaf v'chalta chadalta v'azov tazov v'priko udichtive. Those psukim that it's quoting are clearly talking about prika. So Amarlei, so he answers, Hamani, who's the author of this Braita? Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Damar, Tzar Bala Chaim, Lav Doraita. That we already clarified before, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili clearly has an opinion that Tzar Bala Chaim is the Rabbanan. And what we're now saying is that this is and a Braita, there's an author by Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And therefore, Tzar Bala Chaim is only Midah Rabbanan. That doesn't mean in general we believe that way. This is a continuation of his Shita, which might be a Dat Yachid, that Rabbi Yossi Aglili believes that Tzar Bala Chaim is the Rabbanan. Tashma. So this is a very important sugi here. Ohev Lifrok. If he has a choice between somebody who's very close with and friendly with to unload, Visonei Liton, someone who he dislikes or he maybe even hates to load their animal, mitzvah bisonei, the mitzvah is to do or take care of the person you dislike first, kedei lakof et itzro, in order to quash your inclination. V'isal gadatcha, if you believe Tzar Bala Chaim is doraita, hayodifle, how could you make a decision like that? Because prika is Tzar Bala Chaim, te'ina is no Tzar Bala Chaim. So in terms of precedence, you would have to unload the animal first instead of loading the other animal. Yet, the Braita is telling you, you have to give precedence to your sonet to load rather than your friend or the one you're close with to unload. The fact that we allow you to make such a decision would seem to indicate that Tzar Bala Chaim is only Midah Rabbanan. So you're allowed to make a decision that involves Musar and the way that we are trying to work on your midot and tell you to take care of your sonet first. Gemara says something interesting, afili hachi, kedei lakof et itro adif. That even if Tzar Bala Chaim doraita, there's still a precedence put on melding the individual to have proper midot. First of all, it tells you how important midot are and how important the way that you treat other people is, right? Because of sonei and ohev here, we're telling you to give precedence to the sonei despite the mitzvah doraita of Tzar Bala Chaim in order that you teach yourself to act properly and not to hate individuals. First of all, it tells you how important this mitzvah of lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha is, but also says that you can have certain circumstances where we're going to walk away from Tzar Bala Chaim when it's a Tzorech Adam. And that's here indicative in this process, which is that sometimes Tzorech Adam trumps the Tzar Bala Chaim. So now the Gemara says, Tashma, Hasonei Shamru, Sonei Yisrael, velo Sonei Ovid Chochamim. The sone that we're speaking about, when it says in the pasuk, remember the pasuk says, Ki tirech hamor son acha roveitz tachat masa'o. Who is the sone in the pasuk? Right now we assume the Braita is saying, sone shamru, the sone that we're speaking about is a sone Yisrael. It's a Jew that you hate, velo sone over the kochavim, not a non-Jew. Where it says, Iyamar tzar bala chaim doraita, mali sone Yisrael, mali sone over the kochavim. Why does it matter who you hate or who you dislike that you have to help them out? If the problem is that the animal is overburdened, and Tzar Bala Chaim's Doraita, it should be irrespective of whether you dislike him as a Yisrael, or you dislike him as a Oved Kochavim. Where it says, Misavar et asoneh dekroakoi, who says this is going on the soneh of the Pasuk, asoneh de matznita, the soneh of the Braita koi. It's going on the soneh of the Braita. The Braita that we just quoted over here, which says if you have a choice between an Oved to unload and a sone to load, what type of sone are we speaking over there? There the Gemara says you're talking about a sone Yisrael and not a sone Obed Kochavim. So it's not defining the sone in the pasuk, it's defining the sone in the Braita. The problem is, isn't there a restriction min haTorah of lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, that you're not allowed to hate a fellow Jew? So how is it here that this individual is hating a fellow Jew, and we're telling him in order to be the kufet ayetzer that he should take care of the Sonei Yisrael? Why is he allowed to be Sonei Yisrael at all? The Gemara in Pesachim asks the question straight out. Gemara in Pesachim says, what type of Sonei we're speaking about here? The Gemara in Pesachim in Daf, Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bet, asks the question directly and answers that it's a case where you're allowed to hate him. What's a case where you're allowed to hate a fellow Jew? is where you see a fellow Jew doing an Aveira, and it's obvious that he's doing something wrong, but you can't bring him to court because you're in a single aid, and you're going to have no influence over the case. So you have knowledge that other people don't have of this individual, that this individual has acted inappropriately. The Gemara over there talks about it's a davar erva. It speaks about a davar erva. It's not clear whether it really means illicit relations or it means something that is terrible or unjust that he's doing. And therefore, you have information that allows you to hate him because of his behavior. So therefore, the Gemara says you're justified in hating him. But now you run into a problem. Because if the Gemara says you're justified in hating him, why are we forcing him to reload the animal, the kofet ayetzer, to say don't hate him? Wait a minute. If you're allowed to hate him, why are you telling him not to hate him? So what Tosafot says over here, Tosafot answers the question and says, what about the Gemara in Pesachim that says you're allowed to hate him? V'yesh lamar, delo mayri b'sone dekra. It's not talking about the sone of the pasuk. When we say over here that you hate Israel, it's not in a case where you're justified in hating him. Meaning that the sone over here is a sina that is not justified, and therefore we tell you to load him up in order to likofet ayetzer. But in the pasuk, when we're talking about a justified sone, that's the sone that we're speaking about in the pasuk, that azov tazov imo, you still have to help him out. So Tosfot does is bifurcates the din and says there are different types of sina. There's a sina where you're justified, and then there's a sina where you're unjustified, and that's what this braita is speaking about. That unjustified sina, where then you have to likofet ayetzer. And the Ramban in Psachim says this explicitly. He says that it's bisoni ba'almakai davai ba'isura. The guy's in violation. Lo tisnat achicha ba'vavecha. That's why we want it to be a kofet ayetzer. Aval bisoneh shidiber ba'akatuf. But the soneh that the pasuk speaking about, where you're allowed to hate him, adra mitzvah lakdim ohev shuohev ahuv l'shamayim l'briyot. There you should give precedence to the one who's keeping the Torah, not to the one who is not keeping the Torah. It's clear there. There's no inyan of the kofet ayetzer. That's the way that the Balei Tosafot, the Ramban, deals with that stira. What's very interesting is the Rabbeinu Chananel over here, when he quotes the Gemara, says, listen to what he says. He says, Yaniach ha'ohev v'yaseyeya at the soneh. You should leave the ohev, help out the soneh, v'ela kofet yitzro l'shalom. In order to be kofet your yetzer for peace, for shalom. And he says, upshuta hi. He goes, it's clear as day that this should be the case. So here he talks about maybe a reason behind this. Is that we're trying to engender goodwill between people. And we're trying to have the sone now feel differently about you, or you feel differently about the sone. What's very interesting is that the Tosefta, where this bright is brought from, actually has a different girsa. And in that girsa, it really opens up another possibility, which is, Ohev liton, v'sone lifrok. This is the Tosefta in Baba Metzia, Perek Bet, Halacha Chof Vav. Mitzvah lifrok im asone. There's a mitzvah to unload the sone. So first of all, it's different. So ohev liton, to ohev to load, and the sone lifrok. Mitzvah lifrok im asone. Why? Shelo lishbor et libo. To not break his heart. So first of all, there are those that change the girsa in the Tosefta. But in this girsa, the Tosefta, which is shelo lishbor et libo, to not break his heart, whose heart that you're not trying to break over here? That's very interesting. And if you look at it in the Baruch Hasvardi, he quotes this Tosefta. He says, Toin im sono kedei lekofet yitzro, svarim acherim shelo lishaber et libo. To not to break his heart. Again, whose heart are we talking about over here? And he quotes similarly the Rabbeinu Chananel. He says what the Rabbeinu Chananel says over here. Why does the idea of the Kofet Yitro trump Tzar Baalei Chaim? Because there's another overarching theme in the Torah called peace, shalom. And therefore that's another ethos of the Torah, which is shalom. And therefore if you're talking about Tzar Baalei Chaim versus shalom, shalom trumps. Having peace between people is so important that even trumps Tzar Baalei Chaim. They're both ideas of the Torah, but the Torah gives precedence to shalom over Tzar Baalei Chaim. So that is explained out of Baruch HaSfardi or Rabbeinu Chananel. What's interesting is that the Baruch HaSfardi who quotes that Tosefta says, lo deshaber libo, which is that maybe the reason you have to help out the person, the sone, has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the sone. If you pass by this guy and don't help him out, and then help out with your friend, how is he going to feel? He's going to know that you dislike him. He's going to have enmity towards you. And therefore, there's a reason to help him out, not because of you, but because of him, because of the way that he's going to feel based on your actions. And so therefore, sometimes it's important to help someone out, even when they're not your friend, or even before your friend, in order that those people are not offended or take affront to the fact that you didn't help them out. So that's another dynamic that's there. Then, the big chiddush is in the Tosfot in Pesachim. Tosfot in Pesachim brings the same answer he brings here, but then he brings an additional answer, which has tremendous implications and is a tremendous musar, which is that he says there, the Tosfot in Pesachim, he says, V'yesh lomar, even though V'ashta mak fiyat yetzer shayach kevin mitzvah l'sanoto. The question he has here, if it's a mitzvah to hate him because the Gemara in Pesachim says you're supposed to hate this person because he did something wrong, then why is there any mitzvah the kofit yitzro? V'yesh lomar, kevin shehu sono, since he hates this guy, gam chaveiro sone oto. Then his friend will also hate him. Okay. K'mayim apanim lepanim kein lev adam la'adam. He quotes the pasuk from Mishlei, which the Gemara in Yevamot quotes, about how do you know that a daughter-in-law and mother-in-law are going to hate each other. Gemara over there gives the reason for why they might hate each other and says, what about the other one? It says, well, if one of them hates them, then the other one's going to hate them back. And it quotes this pasuk. There's some reflective nature in human condition that works, that is, I would call it, spirals downward, which is if you hate, they hate. You hate, they hate. There's this reflexive quality. Ubayin mitokach lidei sina gmura. And then you come to this absolute sina, v'shayach kfiyat ha-yetzer. And therefore there is a kfiyat ha-yetzer. Tosfot says something here that is so important. Even where there's justification to hate someone, there's still a risk that you're going to hate them too much. And that is a problem of sinat chinam. I've said this in the past, that I think the definition, the best definition of sinat chinam is disproportionate sina. It's not that you're not justified, you're justified. But the problem is that the justification of the sina is now spiraled out of control, where now the sina has gone to a point where it's no longer reflective of the reason you're supposed to dislike this individual. Tosfot says that's the huge risk here. That even though you're justified in this sina, the kofet ayetzer is to show there's limits to that. We're not going to make it that you just spiral down into this total enmity between the parties. We want you to have a relationship still. We want you to act appropriately in these situations. And therefore, even when there's justification of sina, you still have to be careful. And that's a huge, huge Musar Haskel that comes out of this, which is that even when you're justified in disliking someone, even when you're justified, someone affronted you, did something wrong to you, even if you're justified, you have to be very careful. Because even when you're justified, it can spiral out of control into sinat chinam so easily. Because you dislike them, they get mad at you now, you get mad at them, and then 20 years from now, nobody knows why, nobody talks to each other anymore over some small incident that happened in the past. So it's something that it really comes out of this Gemara that Tosfot points out, I think, is a tremendous, tremendous Musar Haskel. Tashma, roveitz, belover Rav Tzan. The Pasuk says that it's roveitz tachat maso, that it's bending under its burden. Roveitz, but not Rav Tzan. That's someone, this is the first time the animal's doing this. If this animal on a regular basis collapses under its load and it's a stubborn animal, then you don't have to help it out. Roveitz, below a mate. It's burdening, it's crouching under the burden, but not if it's just standing there. Tachat maso, velo mifurak. Under the burden, not already unloaded. It's a strange term. The Gemara will come back and deal with it. Tachat maso, masui shachol amodbo. Under its load, a load that is appropriate. If you say Baruch Haim is right, Mali Roveitz, Mali Ravtzan. Why does it make a difference whether this animal always falls under the burdens or this is the first time that it's happening? Why should it matter? You need to take care of the animal. Mali Omeid, why does it matter if it's just standing? It's still painful for the animal. You got to take care of it. Hamani, who's the author of this Braita? Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Tamar Tzar Bali Chaim, Dirabanan. How do you know that? It's actually Achanami Mistavra. It makes sense. Diktani, Tachan Maso, Masoi Shachon Mon Bo. Manchmai Le Dit Le Hai Svora. Who has that position in the Mishnah? Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Shmamina, that he is the author of this position. And once again, we've already proven that Rabbi Yossi Aglili believes that Tzar Bali Chaim is only me, Dirabanan. Then the Gemara says, Umi Matsin Mukilak Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Can you really say that that bright is like Rabbi Yossi Aglili? Ba'uktani Seifa, Tachat Maso, Velo Mifurak. Under its burden and not already unloaded. Ma'lo Mifurak. Ilem Alo Mifurak Klal. If you say that it's totally unloaded and you have no obligation to reload it, Haktiv, Takim, Takim Imo. You have to do something. You have to help him up. There's an obligation in the Torah. Elabshita, the explanation must be, Lo Mifurak Bechinam. You don't have an obligation when it's unloaded to help reload it for free. Elabeschar, but you can charge him for that reloading. Man shmaitle deitle hai svara. Who has that svara that when it comes to reloading the animal, you're allowed to charge them for it and not do it for free? That is the Rabbanan. That's the Machloket Rabbanan, Rabbi Shimon and the Mishnah. So Gemara says, Lo olam, Rabbi Yossi Aglili. No, the author of this bright is Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Ubetina savar like rabbanan. And then when talking about loading, he holds like the rabbanan that by loading you're allowed to charge, by unloading you're not allowed to charge. It makes it interesting because then he thinks Sarav Bali Chaim is only the rabbanan. That's the case, and his kavu chomer comes from chisaron kis. And that Tosafot deals with, and back on the previous Amud, is then what is his Kal V'chomer? According to Rabbi Yosef Galili, what is the Kal V'chomer if we eliminated Chisaron Kis and we eliminated Tzair Bali Chaim? So Tosafot comes up a way through Chisaron Kis that it can have a Kal V'chomer. Tan Rabbanan, Ki Tir'eh, you see the animal. Yochol afilu mirechok, if it's far away that you have to engage, Tomar Ki Tifga, when you bump into it. Ki Tifga yochol p'kia mamash, maybe you have to literally bump into him or be right there in order to engage. Tamalomer ki tireh, when you see it. So now it's telling you, when are you obligated to get engaged in this mitzvah? Bezu riyah sheish babkiyah. What is a sighting that is like bumping into it? Shiru chachamim, the chamim calculated, echad misheva mechsa b'mil. It's 1/7.5 of a meal. The zeu ris, and that's equivalent to a ris. A meal is 2,000 amot. So it's 2,000 divided by 7.5. That is the distance of a moat that it would be. 266 and 2/3 a moat is the distance by which you are already engaged, or it's going to be within your sphere where you have to deal with it. Beyond that, it's too far away. If it's closer, then you clearly have to engage in it. You have to help him along for parsa. Rashi writes over here, after you've loaded it up, then you have to continue to help him because it might fall off again, it might shift. So there you have to help him along the way. So Amar Rabbi Bachanan will tell Schar, that you can charge for. So Rashi says that it's talking about continuing with him after you've loaded him up. Tosafot says that's obvious. You can charge him for loading. Of course you can charge him for staying with him to keep the load on. So Tosafot says, no, it's the case of Prika, where you unloaded it. And you have to stay with him after you've unloaded it. You stay with him to make sure he's okay. Now, it's a little harder to read the Gemara now, because why do you have to stay with him after you unloaded it? Obviously it means you unloaded and reloaded. So, Tosafot says it has to do with unloading, and then you have to make sure that the animal is able to hold the load, and now you don't have to unload it again, and you can stay with him, you take schar, even though you can't take schar for the unloading, you can take schar for the accompaniment. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph.